This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Sarah Norell from... What's the name of the Swedish monopoly?
It's Systembolaget.
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 Systembolaget. Rolls off the tongue, Lovely, lovely. Last week we were talking about the monopoly and sourcing wines and how you choose wines. This week I just want to have a look at what's popular or what the Swedish people like to drink.
They like Italian wines.
Do they?
Excellent for the Swedish market. Actually, it's 28% of all the wines we sell at Systembolaget is Italian wines.
Really?
Yes. And then number two is France with 14.
Oh, that's a huge... Normally, Italy and France are sort of pretty even or slightly ahead for France.
No, but if you talk about value, it's not that big a difference. But in volume, it's really Italy doing great.
So the French wines are a little bit more pricey, but...
Yeah, a little bit more pricey, but the Italian wines are doing well also when it comes to the more exclusives.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Any particular regions from Italy or...?
Yes, what's been really successful in Sweden has been the Amarone and the Valpolicella wines. But they are losing a bit now. Right. And I think that it's Piedmont and Tuscany doing better. But obviously the biggest volumes are from the Veneto region and from Puglia.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more volume end, isn't it? Puglia is quite hot down in the end, the south, isn't it?
And they do the big volumes together with Sicily, of course.
Yeah. Puglia is quite famous for Primitivo or Zinfandel.
Yes.
Is that the big grape variety from there?
I would say that if you look at the consumers, they recognize Zinfandel more.
Yeah.
So a lot of Italian wines are actually being packaged.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness me. I had to show an American Zinfandel at one point for a tasting, and it was, you know, we didn't have one that was appropriate, so I actually bought one from the supermarket, and I bought it thinking the packaging was all American, yeah, wanted, blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
I know it, we have it
as well.
You
know that one, yeah. And my goodness me, I got home and I was like, to try it, and I was like, oh, no, I've made a mistake.
But
tasted
nice. Yeah.
It was nice wine. But
yeah, good wine.
It really sold itself as an American wine, even though it was Italian from Puglia.
It's interesting because, and that's what the consumer wants, obviously, because it's wine's doing well. But you can think a little bit about the authenticity. What's Italy? What's America? It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So whites or reds?
White's been doing better than red's, actually losing a bit, but reds are selling much bigger volumes. But we had, you know, this wonderful summer we had.
Yeah, did you have that as well?
We had also the hottest ever, I think, and we did a lot of white wines and a lot of rosé wines.
Yeah.
And it was also, you were not allowed to barbecue.
Got so too hot fire risk.
If there was such a fire risk, you were not allowed to barbecue anywhere. So no red wines. We had to drink things. But also great. What's doing well is part of the Italian success is the Prosecco.
Oh, yeah. In the UK, there's people talking about peak Prosecco. Not that it's losing its luster. It's more that the growth is starting to taper off a little bit. You know, Prosecco in the UK has had double-digit growth for quite a long time.
How much Prosecco can they make? That's fantastic.
Well, they expanded the region, 10 years ago or 8 years ago, and changed it from being a DOCG to a DOC, and they did all sorts of stuff to increase the volume and change the market mix. But okay, so Prosecco's big?
Yeah.
England is a really big drinker of fizz. You go to a party and there's three types of wines, whites, reds and fizz.
Yeah.
And they're all about as popular as each other. Whereas maybe when I was younger, when I first got into the wine trade, fizz was something you might have as an aperitif.
Yeah.
Now you're at an evening, people just drink it all night long.
Yeah.
Is that the same sort
of
thing?
Yeah, I would say probably it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting, isn't it?
But I would also say that since we are the monopoly and we're also in the business to make people think about what they are drinking and why they are drinking it, so we have had a great growth also in the non-alcoholic products. So that's also an interesting part because more and more people are aware of their health.
yep.
and wellness.
Do you, in the UK, low and non-alcoholic wines generally on the up, and there's a most people are picking it to be a big trend for next year.
Yeah.
I still haven't had a non-alcoholic wine I think really is good, but I've had ones that have been okay.
Yeah.
Because they always lack, for me, they always lack, you know, alcohol gives weight to a wine.
Yeah, it does, no doubt.
And you'll end up replacing that weight with sugar. Mm-hmm. And then people, you know, people talk about alcohol with your liver, but then sugar's just as bad for your liver. And, you know, so you're replacing it with one poison with another poison, and it's like, pff,
I think what we've seen doing the best are actually the non-alcoholic beers.
Oh, yeah. I've had some, yeah.
There are a lot of craft breweries in Sweden doing great non-alcoholic yeah. beers. Fantastic.
I actually quite like Erdinger? Yeah.
That's German.
I know it's German. But it's still, it was the first non-alcoholic beer I ever had that I thought, do you know what?
Yeah.
This is actually quite good.
Yeah, it's a Weiss beer.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually quite decent. So I was like, oh, okay, there is a hope for non-alcoholic. I've got a friend who just drinks non-alcoholic beer when we go out. And it's great. Designated driver, you know.
No, you can. Yeah. I think it's good. We also have done a lot of specific apple juices from specific apple.
Oh, yeah. Varietal apricots.
Varietals from a specific farm and et cetera. So that's also, I think, interesting. And they tend to be very precise on when to harvest the apple to get the right level of acidity and sugar.
On a special request, we had a request for apple juice tasting.
Oh, you did.
And I tell you what, we tasted a lot of apple juices before we chose the ones we liked, but I was really impressed.
Yeah.
You get a lot of nice variety. You don't get complexity necessarily, but you get some really nice varieties.
Big differences, I think that's great.
I found I really like Cox's apple juice.
Yeah.
Cox's apples. So, yeah. What about packaging? Is it, you know, like... some Scandinavian countries are big into bag and box.
Yeah, all of them are, more or less. I think we are it's very convenient with a bag and box. And also, if you talk about the environment, it's a very efficient packaging compared to glass bottles.
Yeah.
And Systembolaget, it's not that we've been pushing bag and box, because actually from the start we said, no, we don't want to do, that was before my time, we don't want to do bag and box or Tetras, because we think it's sort of lowering the attitude towards wine, and it's also very easy to have another glass.
Yeah.
But we were overruled and we had to bring it in. And when we brought it in, we said that we need to have better quality.
Yep.
So we have a lot of quite good wines in bag-in-box in Sweden, and also, I think, in our neighboring countries, Finland and Norway. So it's about 50% of all the wines sold in Sweden, volume-wise, are sold in bag-in-box.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well, is that you've got lots of better, like there's nothing wrong with bag-in-box
it's fantastic.
Yeah,
and like I said, it's good for the environment.
Yeah, and it also means, you know, you say it's hard to manage your consumption, and it is, but if you're opened a bottle of wine, it's hard to manage your consumption if you've got a bottle of wine open.
Yeah.
And at least with a bag and box, you can have a glass and the wine doesn't deteriorate over the week. Whereas if you have
That's the other side of the coin too.
Yeah.
You can take just one glass, not finish the full bottle.
So I was always quite impressed with the idea that you guys went more upmarket with bag and box.
Mm.
And did you get much pushback from higher end producers who maybe looked down on bag and box?
Both yes and no. And I think those who went for the bag and box early on, the quality producers, it was a big part of their success, not only in Sweden but totally. It's because if you are in with a product selling very well on our shelves, it's going to be a big volume, especially if it's in the bag and box.
Yeah. Do you find bag and box, because of the packaging costs and particularly the delivery and distribution costs, do they come in just a little bit cheaper, or is it?
Yeah, they come in a little bit cheaper due to lower handling costs and filling costs.
Yeah, I would have thought so, but not much. I mean, it's
no, but a bit,
a little bit, which helps drive sales a little bit. And just before we finish up, just a quick one: Sweden, You know, there's global warming, or depending on who you listen to, maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I'm an advocate of global warming.
I think it is. And I think we have to, as a big retailer, have to take responsibility for that. So we put a lot of effort behind sustainability and climate.
Mm. But one of the nice things about it, well, you know, there are, like, global warming has a lot of negatives, but there are some positives.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is that wine can be now produced in countries that maybe struggled. England used to be very marginal. They've sort of found a product that isn't so bad if the weather's bad, which is sparkling wines, because you need acidity in sparkling wine, so a slightly underripe grape isn't as tragic as maybe an underripe red wine. But Sweden has been making wines.
There are more and more producers actually doing really good and really good wines.
Yeah.
They are expensive, naturally, but after this vintage, I think they're going to be very happy because it was both a good summer and a good autumn.
That's 2018 vintage. And what sort of in the UK, they've gone down the sparkling route because of the acidity being a positive attribute in sparkling wines.
Now we are starting to see some sparkling wines as well in Sweden, but it's mainly white and also some reds.
What sort of grape varieties are
they
using?
That's what I'm thinking about. Rondo is the red one.
Yeah, Rondo, yeah.
Oh, my God, what's the white one? It's Solaris.
Oh, Solaris, okay. Okay, that's growing in the UK as well. There's a bit of it up towards Cambridge ways, Norfolk ways.
Yeah.
Solaris. Okay.
Oh, but like I said, Rondo is the red one and Solaris is the white wine really good wines.
Yeah.
Some really good wines.
I've had some Solaris from the UK and it's all right. So, yeah, in the UK they tend to go for Bacchus because it's more Sauvignon Blanc-y. Bacchus can look like a Sauvignon Blanc in some ways. So, Sauvignon Blanc is quite popular at the moment. That's sort of why they're going for that, I think.
But, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And how many producers are there, do you know? Or?
There are, I think, something like over 100, but not many of them are commercial.
Okay.
That's a handful, more or less.
All right then, Sarah, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chris, for inviting me.
Cheers.
Cheers.